So when I was in Korea,
Yes.
we would heat our rooms with these really interesting mobile gas heaters. Have
Okay.
you ever seen one of these? They're on wheels.
We had some of those in Mexico.
Yeah. And they, for those who aren't familiar, they release gas like from the bottom. There's just a grill on the front. There's a metal grill with behind it these metal, I guess, wires, not wires,
Yeah.
but you know, like chicken cage coop stuff, like that thinness. And it would just have gas burning and heat those filaments up, which would heat the room. And
Yeah, in Mexico, when I was there in the 90s, these would cause horrific deaths every single year, either
because,
from fires or from suffocation.
suffocation. So we learned that a little bit of wind would make the fire ripple or go away. Did you guys ever do this?
No, because all my companions were really, really, really cautious around
We were not necessarily as cautious around them. And what we learned you could do is, I don't know if you've ever done like the Goku thing where you're like, whoa, you know, and you're like building up your power and things like that. My companions, who were, you know, these are Korean guys, would be like, here, watch, see my gi, which is the Korean version of chi. I have, and they go, whoa, and then they put their hands together and go like this, and it would force air across the thing and it would go. And so I have learned that this is the way you test your gi is you have to go whoa, a whole bunch. You have to put your hands together and you have to like strain, and then you can make fire ripple on the front of a heater.
Okay. That's good. I'm glad that if you were going to play around with a deadly device that could kill you, that it was for a good reason.
Gi
Gee,
in
that's
Korean,
awesome.
it is a good, and in Korean, if you want to ask someone how someone is, you say "기분 어떠세요?" Which ki is your ki. And basically, you're asking, how's your ki today?
Oh.
How's your chi? If you want to say, how are you doing? Yeah,
That's nice.
how's your chi today, Dan?
My chi today is okay.
Yeah.
It's not
It's
stellar.
not the best
I
chi.
didn't really sleep last night,
Oh,
so
yeah?
yeah. When I was in Mexico, which was 96 through 98, Dragon Ball was enormous in Mexico at the time. It was that's kind of when it was big everywhere, right? But it was so big in Mexico. So absolutely, there were several Kamehamehas all around, even where I was. So
But we are not talking about Dragon Ball today.
we are not.
We're going to talk about an unusual topic for us.
There's absolutely people who are like, they're going to come back to Dragon Ball 17 times over the course of this episode, assuming that it is going to be a gimmick. It's not a
It's
gimmick.
not a gimmick.
It's
It's
the
just
last time
something
we're going to talk
I
about it.
thought about as we were starting, because we're actually going to talk about. I was thinking, what are topics we haven't covered? I'm like, we've covered pretty much everything, all the big ones. And then the idea struck me,
Yes.
perhaps related to our own personal interests and things, that there is perhaps the most popular topic in the world.
Other than weather,
Maybe even more so popular, because weather
maybe
is not popular. Weather is talked about.
common, but
It's
it's not
common, but
popular.
what do people enjoy talking about is a thing that I had never thought
What
about,
other people other than us talk about?
which is sports.
Sports. Okay. Are there any sports that you, I'm not going to say follow, but are interested in?
I like all sports.
Really?
I think all sports are awesome.
Okay.
I don't follow or watch them, but I think they
But
are
you are
really cool.
glad they exist.
I think they are really cool. I have never had a bad time at a sporting event. I'm sure it could exist. Every time I've gone, it's not something I think of going and doing. I go and I'm like, this is really cool. You know, the fun of the competition. It's like gladiatorial arena, but nobody dies, hopefully.
Usually not.
Usually not. It's people at the top peak of their ability displaying what the human body is capable of doing. I really enjoy myself going to sporting
That's
events.
awesome. You've got three sons.
Yeah.
Have any of them turned into sports people?
They haven't. We've talked about this before, the fact that growing up in the 80s and 90s, there was this false opposition between sports people and nerdy people, which the movies and television shows tried to reinforce to us all the time, and that never manifest really in my life.
Not
Like, we
really.
did keep to different cliques, but they weren't like mean to each other, just different interests draw people together
Yeah,
and things like that.
it's not that we're going to make fun of somebody else so much as we just don't know what to say to them.
Yeah.
But you've got people like one of our very good friends, Eric James Stone.
Yeah.
You know, a Nebula-winning science fiction writer who is also one of the biggest football fans that I know.
Yeah. Well, and my friend Earl, who is an uber nerd, also is one of the biggest sports people that I know as well. Because what they don't tell you in those movies is that sports people are nerds.
Oh, yeah.
In the good definition, that the reclaimed definition of nerd.
The reclaimed definition. Really hardcore sports people do cosplay.
Yep.
They will wear their favorite player's jersey or the shoes. They will do role-playing with fantasy football and things like that, where you recruit a team.
Yeah.
It's all the same
memorizing
stuff.
Statistics and things like this, and intricate rules and things like that. Like, I identify really well with the sports people as an adult. I totally get why they get excited to the point that, you know, we joke sometimes, oh, sports ball. Oh, look how little I know. Even when I do it, I'm like, eh, I shouldn't even do that.
The word sports ball itself is so kind of cruelly dismissive.
Yes.
The thing you're nerdy about is dumb, and the thing I'm nerdy about is cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not a great attitude. Have you seen the stand-up comedian who, and I have no idea who he is. I've only seen him online. Mm-hmm. And he gets up and he starts talking about his World of Warcraft character and the guild that he's in and the whatever and the build that he is using, and it goes on for 30 or 40 seconds, and then without missing a beat he says, and now you know how I feel when you talk about football, which I've always thought was funny, because that is usually, I am one of the only people in my family on either side, mine or my wife's family, that does not really follow football.
Right.
It is not a sport that interests me, but my siblings, my parents, my in-laws, they all love it. And so, yeah, I've been that guy in the room who's like, I watch League of Legends.
Yes, so that's the sport you like. Do you follow soccer?
I don't follow Major League Soccer, but I do love it. I watch the World Cup constantly, Women's World Cup. If I do follow anything, it is like Mexican League Soccer. Mm-hmm. But even then, I wouldn't say I follow it so much as when I have occasion to watch it, I will.
Right.
The one sport that I do follow, like pay attention to on purpose and track how the teams are doing, is actually baseball.
Okay. Really?
Which kind of fits the nerd like vibe.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a statistical, slow-paced game.
I did know this about you because we talked about one of my favorite video essays at one point, which is the Patrick H. Willems Why Baseball Makes Great.
Which I went and watched, and he's 100% right about everything. It's a fantastic video essay.
Yep.
Baseball is the most cinematic sport. Every year when spring rolls around and MLB season kicks off, I once again start following the Padres. They're my team. And then I also go back to my idea. I want to at some point create a role-playing game that's about baseball players. It's basically a league of their own, the role-playing game, where you get on the crappy bus and you, you know, drive around from tiny town to tiny town and get into fist fights in between games. I've never actually done it. I haven't thought of a good system for it, but I think that would be cool at some point.
That would be cool.
Meh.
So I went to a lot of sporting events when I was younger. Because I was in the marching band.
The marching band. Playing trumpet.
Yep. And so being in the marching band, you go to a lot of sporting events. And I was in the pep band, you know, with the, what do we do with all of these marching band people now that football season's done? I have them go play at the basketball games.
Sure.
I actually preferred the basketball games, playing at them. I enjoyed not being outside with a cold metal trumpet in my frozen fingers in Nebraska in the wintertime. And so every time it rolled around, they're like, now you're going to go and you don't have to wear your uniform. You wear like a t-shirt instead. You don't have to wear the uncomfortable cap. You don't have to be like in this fake sort of military looking costume. You just are there to have fun and play music in between, you know, when there's timeouts and things like that. So,
yeah. Well, that's cool.
Do they call them timeouts in basketball? What do they call them?
Sure.
Ad breaks. Yes.
Breaks.
Yeah. Except they did, it's high school, so they didn't actually.
I don't know what they call them. When we were in high school, and I don't know if this is still true, like baseball is considered the national pastime.
Yep.
Because it used to be the biggest sport. And when we were in high school, it was absolutely basketball. And I always thought that was so dumb. Why do people call baseball the national pastime? And I would say it went through a period where it was football And I feel like maybe it's back to basketball again.
Really?
I don't know. What?
Well, I think.
What do you think?
You're going to have a skewed perspective living in Utah because there's not a professional football team.
We don't have an NFL team.
But we have a professional basketball team.
We have an NBA team.
And so basketball, I think, gets a boost here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do have two.
Well, and I went to West High School in Salt Lake City, which is like a block away from where the Jazz play. So
we do have.
Prevalent. Sorry. Go ahead.
We do have two good football teams, not spectacular
like college
teams,
football,
but
yeah,
like, you know, in Nebraska, we had one. We had the Cornhuskers. Mm-hmm. They were great. But here you have both the U and BYU,
yeah,
which both compete.
Massive rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy War.
Yes.
Have I told you this? University of Laramie.
Laramie, Wyoming?
Laramie, Wyoming.
Okay.
They are in a rivalry with BYU that BYU doesn't know about. And I will never not be amused by that. They hate BYU.
Mm-hmm.
Playing against BYU is the biggest game of their year because they're like, oh, we're going to beat our rivals. We're going to crush them, make them sad. And BYU doesn't know, really. I didn't know that this was happening until I married a girl from Wyoming and was like, oh, wait.
Laramie, Wyoming's even in the same...
They were in the 90s.
Okay.
Like I say, I don't follow football, so I don't know if this is still an ongoing thing. Okay. BYU's biggest rival is the U.
Mm-hmm.
Laramie's biggest rival is BYU. And the asymmetry of that delights me endlessly.
I played in the band, the BYU band, at the Holy War BYU University of Utah game.
What year?
It was 94.
94.
94, I was in the BYU band.
Okay.
And BYU lost quite... It was actually kind of humiliating because BYU lost at the same score point that they'd lost a few years before, or maybe even the year before, because people were holding up signs for that score point. I think it ended at that same score point.
Same.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or very close to it. And it was cold. The University of Utah marching band was so gracious. I can remember to this day how nice they were inviting us in and things like that. The fans were not. And I would imagine that perhaps the U band coming to BYU would not be treated terribly well either. But
fans on both sides are terrible.
I'm making light of this. I get hit by snowballs, like ice snowballs, repeatedly.
While playing,
and it hurts.
Well.
Yeah.
So this was... After you and I had met, but we didn't really know each other very well.
Yeah.
I was very good friends with a girl who was part of the Air Force ROTC.
Uh-huh.
And so I volunteered with them a lot in like 1998.
Okay.
And so when that big game happened in 98, it happened at BYU.
Oh, really?
Which means that they mobilize all of the ROTC kids to go out and patrol the campus all night long and make sure nobody comes and like... spray paints the statues red or whatever.
When you said that game, I was thinking of their rivalry.
No, not an Air Force game.
Yeah.
The BYU-Utah game.
Yeah.
And so I, as a volunteer with the AFROTC, was out all night kind of wandering around looking for trouble. That's the year, if you remember, that they went up. They couldn't get onto the campus because we were all there.
Yeah.
And they went up and they painted a U onto the Y. BYU has a big, huge cement letter Y on the side of a mountain. And U of U has a letter U on their mountain and the next valley over. And some U students came and put a little red U on the white Y.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember hearing that the Y had been painted, but I get up late enough in the day that it had already been taken care of.
Well, and it looked like a smiley face.
Okay.
Like the Y is so big that... painting a U big enough to be seen from the valley, they ran out of paint really quick. So it was pretty small, and it looked like a cute little smiley face on the Y. Anyway, finished doing that and then went to this other event straight from all-night vigil to this other event that was happening day of the game, which is where I met my wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, sports.
Somehow me being in like three layers of sweats and unshowered, she's like, that's the man for me.
I do remember Brigham Young getting painted once.
Yeah, that happened, I think, the year before, which is why they mobilized us in 98.
Yeah, but I still, even though it was cold and things, I enjoyed the games. I enjoyed being there. I think it's a fun thing. BYU Stadium really needs better seats. It probably does.
I had season tickets when I was a freshman because one of my neighbors back home was a huge BYU fan. And he told me, hey, you're going to be a BYU student next year. Mm-hmm. They give you a really good discount on season tickets. I will buy the season tickets for you if you give me half of them. And I'm like, sure. So the only time that I really went to football games with any regularity was because someone else had bought the tickets for me.
I did go to a bunch of Nebraska games when I lived in Nebraska. Just something you do in Nebraska. It just happens to you. You're just, you know, there on a Saturday and you have nothing to do. And suddenly you blink and you're in the stadium eating a red hot dog. It just happens to you.
Yeah.
We've talked before about how hardcore Nebraska was on their football when I was young.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Is that a college team?
It's a college team.
It's a college team.
Yeah, but when I was there, it was the time when they were winning a lot and had like three national championships in 4 years. I've mentioned that before. And so Nebraskans, I'm sure, are hardcore about their team regardless because they only have one. There's no divided loyalties for the state. Number two, there's no national anything. No NFL team, no basketball team.
No major league sports franchise of any flavor.
And it's Nebraska, and there's not a whole lot, you know. There's not as much to do, perhaps, as we find in some other places.
So it was playing D&D or going to a football game.
Yep, or both at the same time. But this is how you end up with on game day, you know, your principal dressed up as the mascot. Mm-hmm. At your elementary school and all of these things I've talked about. So it's just kind of a thing that happens. I have been to a Jazz game only once.
One time.
I have been to one Jazz game. Okay. I feel very proud that I managed to make it to a Jazz game. So I've technically been to a many BYU games, but at least one U game and one Jazz game.
One Jazz game. Mm-hmm. I have been also, I think, to one Jazz game.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably more than that because I grew up in Salt Lake, but yeah. And I've been to a Real Salt Lake game.
Oh, I haven't
which
been.
Which is our major league
that.
Soccer team.
Yes, I should do that sometime.
Yeah.
I've never been to a soccer game like a major league. What do they call them?
It's MLS. Yeah. Having lived 2 years in Mexico and 2 years in Germany, it is, and this is such a douchey thing to say, it's hard for me to take American soccer seriously.
Don't they always do pretty well, right?
Like the women, absolutely. Men's soccer, we qualify for the World Cup every 4 years, and then we never really do well in it.
See, qualifying is hard.
It's still impressive. Like I absolutely recognize that.
We have a pretty good team. We must have pretty good players. You don't qualify if you don't.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. There's some innate prejudice in me that's like, I'd rather be watching, you know, Bundesliga or something. But, yeah.
I've never been to a major league baseball game. That's something I should do, huh? With how often I fly to New York.
You should.
Yeah, I should go to a Mets game or a
Yankees
game.
Well, and there's teams all over the place.
Yep. Just that I'm often in New York, and Moshe, our mutual friend, is just like an enormous fan of the Yankees, I believe.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm hoping I wasn't going to get that wrong.
He's like a huge Mets fan, and we've both just said he's a Yankees fan. We'll hear about it.
I remember him in a Yankees hat frequently, and I do not think it is a Mets hat. And I think I remember remarking on it being like, everyone hates the Yankees, but I guess I'm in New York now, and this is where they don't.
It's where they love the Yankees. No, in fact, I know he loves the Yankees because the first time that I visited Manhattan, we wanted to buy little, you know, tchotchkes and whatever to take home to our kids. And on his recommendation, we got a Yankees hat for my son. So
there you are.
Yep. Yeah.
Good old Moshe.
Now, because I'm still the nerd gamer, I do love playing Strat-O-Matic Baseball.
Oh?
Which is such an old school, goofy board game.
I've never even heard of it.
Never even heard. Strat-O-Matic Baseball is, there's a whole Strat-O-Matic series. There's one for hockey and there's one for football. And baseball's the original one because it is the game of statistics, right? And they do just insane amounts of number crunching, mm-hmm. and then produce a little card for every player that's like, with a couple of fairly simple dice rolls, you can mm-hmm. simulate with more or less accuracy how well that player would do hmm. against, you know, this particular pitcher or whatever. And so every year they put out a new set of Strat-O-Matic Baseball. They release them in February, and I got mine, that's like reflecting all of the stats from the previous MLB season as accurately as we can make it, so that then you can play your own games and see how they compare to what actually happened.
Do you like roll dice?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a little board and you like move tokens around from base to base and roll dice.
I know the system that you should make your role-playing game based around.
No, because it would be a terrible model for an RPG engine.
Mm.
One of the problems with Strat-O-Matic Baseball, and one of the reasons that other companies keep coming in, is there's not a ton of decisions to be made, because it is more of a simulation than it is a game. So okay. you can make decisions like whether you're going to steal or whether you're going to bring the infield in to try to hold someone on a base. You can intentionally walk somebody. Mm-hmm. But other than those like handful of things, you're mostly just rolling dice and it just randomly produces an outcome.
Okay. Isn't that kind of how most games happen?
I mean, games ideally should be based on decisions,
right?
That's
true. Is that Sid Meier's? A game is a sequence of interesting decisions.
That sounds like
Sid Meier.
Either
Sid Meier, it might be Richard Garfield.
Have I told you my Great Gatsby story?
Tell me your Great Gatsby story, Dan.
Okay, so our mutual friend, Bryce Moore.
Bryce.
Wonderful author.
Mm-hmm.
Who's actually coming in July.
Yep.
He believes and told me at one point, and he is a librarian, like professionally, that's his job. He is a college librarian in Maine. He told me that he believes Great Gatsby to be the greatest American novel.
Okay.
The capital G great American novel.
There's a good argument for that.
And there's an okay mm-hmm. argument to yeah. be made for that. Mm-hmm. I personally would probably maybe pick Huck Finn, but okay. I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. And either way, I was not going to admit that it was Great Gatsby. And so mm-hmm. I fought him on this.
Okay.
And we went back and forth and we argued and argued. And finally he said, we need to just play a game to decide it, because he mm-hmm. is a board gamer.
Yeah.
And I said, we don't need to play a game. If we want the universe to tell us, then we need to play a game with absolutely no decisions in it, where mm-hmm. it is purely the outcome of random chance, and thus the universe will be able to inform us as to what it is. So we picked Candyland, and the winner would decide. We played a game of Candyland to see what the great American novel is, which is why I can tell you with authority that the greatest American novel is The Great Gatsby. Because I lost a game of Candyland.
You lost a game of Candyland. That's interesting. I love the discussion of the great American novel, right? This mm-hmm. whole concept, because it's partially a little insulting, but in a,
yes.
In an academically interesting sense. And for those who aren't familiar with it, like, I wonder where it started. There's this discussion of, when will America have a great novelist?
Yeah.
And then others saying, there have been lots of great novelists in America. And they're like, well, which is the great American
what is it
novel?
That, yeah, what the whole root of yeah. the great American novel really is our kind of inferiority complex about British
yeah.
literature
mm-hmm.
and the wider world of French and Russian and, you know, mm-hmm. Latin American. And so, yeah, people will argue back and forth mm-hmm. about what it is.
And you
know.
Think it's Huck Finn? So it's a good choice.
It's a good choice. I genuinely love Huckleberry Finn. I understand all of the complaints about it.
Yep.
It is a deeply, devoutly, and overtly anti-racist novel, but I have to imagine it would be incredibly difficult for people of certain backgrounds to read it because mm-hmm. of what it depicts and the way that it depicts it. Mm-hmm. I am not going to argue that at all.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there are people who hate it on those grounds. I think it is inarguably a great novel, though.
Yeah.
I really love, you know, the moment where Huck says, all right, I'll go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take up wickedness again, which is my line, having been brought up to it. And if I can think of something worse, I'll do that, too. Because as long as I'm in and in for good, I might as well go whole hog. I have the whole thing memorized because it's such a wonderful moment where freeing a slave he's been taught is so wrong mm-hmm. that he's willing to go to hell in order to do it, in order to help his friend get out of slavery. That's a wonderful moment. But, you know, there's other really great novels.
What are your top five that would you'd say for someone says, well, you got to give us five that people will vote on as the great American novel.
Great American novel.
Which is, by the way, how much we know about sports is that we're talking books, but we'll get back to it.
So define parameters. Is this a novel that is about America?
Nope, it's just that phrase, great American.
Great American novel.
You have to decide.
The great American novel.
Yep.
I'm going to say Huck Finn.
Yep.
I'm going to say Great Gatsby.
Okay.
I'm going to say Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton.
Okay.
I am going to say American Gods by Neil Gaiman, who is okay. British.
So wait a minute.
Does it count?
You can put it on your list, but I'm gonna say that.
That book is about America so intimately.
But the phrase Great American Novel is about when are the Americans going to write?
When are the Americans going to write a novel to rival? Finally.
Yeah, so if you put a British person on the list, it's a slap in the face that we can't write a Great American Novel. But you're welcome to slap us.
To slap you right across your fifth? The face. What's your fifth Great American Novel?
Waiting to see if you put my any.
Because I know that I'm going to forget. Like, my favorite novel of all time is Dune. I'm not going to say that's the great American novel.
So Moby Dick is the one that I would put on the list that you haven't gotten to yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would actually put Dune on my list.
Really?
So Dune would probably not make it to my top because I think Foundation would need to be on my list. And I think is a more American.
Yes.
Right?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Much more American.
So for me, I'd have to look at, like, what are the periods of American literature? And the pulp, like, science fiction era is an extremely foundational aspect of American culture, mm-hmm. American cultural dominance in the world, and these sorts of things. And so because of that,
yeah,
Foundation has to be pretty high on my list. But
that's a good argument.
Mm-hmm. If you go back a generation, well, a couple generations, but you know, mm-hmm. to Moby Dick era, like this is exemplifying what America was and how it was built and in a lot of ways. And it is a fantastic novel. I really like Moby Dick. So there is that.
Yeah.
So those are probably the two that are duking it out for me. Great Gatsby would make my list because, again, it's about a distinct period of American culture written by a great American writer. So...
yeah. My list of favorite books of all time is very non-American, which perhaps, you know, is another slap in the face of the Americans who write novels. But I would say off the top of my head, Dune. I'd be very tempted to put American Gods on that list. Love it.
Oh, your favorites?
Yeah.
Or read American?
Not Americans,
totally
but
go on
favorite
favorites.
Novels. House of the Spirits by Isabel Allende, which I'm actually rereading right now for like the fifth time, which I shouldn't tell you because I still am behind on Stormlight Archive. I should be reading that instead.
We do not want you to hate the Stormlight Archive because it keeps you from reading other things. I'm always okay if someone puts down one of my books to take a break.
Yeah.
They're big books.
They are big books.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm also going to put on this list... oh, boy. I can never decide if it should be Les Mis or if it should be Hunchback of Notre Dame. Because I love Victor Hugo. He's one of my favorite authors ever. And then maybe number five, I would say favorite novel of all time. Secret Agent by Joseph Conrad. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, well, I mean, you've got Dune on your list. You've got Americans on your list.
Yeah, there's American. Yeah. Oh, no. The fifth one would absolutely be Scanner Darkly by Philip K. Dick.
Well, there you go. A second American.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So that's good. You said there weren't going to be, but two
there
out of five.
Two out of the five. We're
literature.
American dudes. Only one of them is by woman, though. I feel guilty about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
What would mine be? Dune is on my list. Mm-hmm. Les Mis is on my list. Pride and Prejudice is on my list. Two other favorite novels, Tigana and Dragonsbane, maybe?
Okay.
So that's probably where I would go right now. The thing is, some of my favorites are series. For instance, The Wheel of Time doesn't like work as a favorite novel. It works as a, this whole thing is really cool. And I think the sum of the parts is greater than each individual piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we transition this conversation
back
smoothly
sports.
Back to sports?
You just did it, man. Good job.
We say, so have you ever read Field of Dreams?
Moneyball?
I actually love Moneyball. I have watched the movie several times, and I've even read the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have not, and I have not read Field of Dreams. I did not finish A River Runs Through It, which, fishing sport, does
yeah.
that count?
Yeah, it's a sports thing.
Didn't finish that.
Didn't like A River Runs Through It,
It was fine. I was reading it on a plane flight, and I got done with the plane flight, I never picked it up.
I've never read it. I just saw the movie.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was well-written, but never finished it for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Other famous sports books, Ender's Game.
Ender's Game's a sports
Ender's
book.
Ender's Game totally counts. Other sports books.
What are fantasy and science fiction stories where sports are prominent? You've got Ender's Game,
Unseen Alchemicals,
and you've got Quidditch.
Yeah,
and then what else?
Unseen Alchemicals by
what is that?
It's a Terry Pratchett sports novel.
Oh, okay. It's quite good. I haven't read that one.
What are other ones that sports?
Because
are...
we said at the very beginning, sports is such an intrinsic part of the human experience.
Yes,
every culture has them.
Blue Screen.
Blue Screen is about esports.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like there's not a lot of fantasy and science fiction books about sports.
That's part of why I wrote The Arithmetist.
Yeah, which is about a game.
Yep. I realized, hey, I don't write books about games. There's not enough of them, you know. But at the same time, I do think that we have a lot more time for games now than in certain periods in human history. Not to say that there weren't games. I mean, the famous Mesoamerican ball game, but...
But even, like, there's a lot of fantasy and historical that include jousting.
Yes, that's true.
It's a huge part of the Game of Thrones series.
Yeah.
Arthurian legends, the absolute classic A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger.
Which
that's
is
a sports movie.
It's an amazing film.
Mm-hmm. I watched one of those. I follow several history channels on YouTube. And there was one where they had this historian lady who was going through various historical, like her specific period of expertise is kind of early medieval or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how accurate is this movie? How accurate is this movie? And they got to A Knight's Tale and she laughed out loud and she said, "Never come at a medieval historian about A Knight's Tale. We all adore it."
Do you remember watching it for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember this experience.
I think most of Leading Edge group all went over together, right?
And we didn't know what to expect, just that, you know, it was some medieval film. And I can remember it clicking with me in that opening sequence where they're singing, "We Will Rock You."
Yeah.
And that sequence is really good because it's like, oh, I get it. I get it already. I get it immediately. And I turned off the part of my brain that was going to criticize any sort of historical sense of it and just enjoyed the film.
Well, and one thing that this historian lady pointed out is the jousting, because it's early medieval, or at least the depiction of it in A Knight's Tale, is actually further removed from classical music than classical music is from Queen.
Oh, yeah.
And so it would be just as much of an anachronism to have a classical music or symphonic soundtrack over that movie as to have rock. So go ahead and have rock. That's all I got.
That's all we got on sports.
Yeah. We did our best.
we really ended up
talking about novels for like 10 minutes in the middle of it.
We came
back to sports at the end.
Yes.
One day, okay, we're going to end on esports, which is the splitting the difference between nerdy stuff. Somebody suggested in a YouTube comment, and I think it's a wonderful idea. One day I'm going to get you to live cast a League of Legends game with me.
You pitched this to me, this idea that I, knowing nothing about the game, have to watch and pretend to be a, you know, commentator on what's going on League of Legends. I think this is a terrible idea. Which might make it a great idea. I think I'm going to spend a lot of time saying there's lights flashing on the screen and the little person has done the person thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The person clearly pressed a button.
They pressed the correct button, I see, because they are not dead.
Yeah.
And their teammates are not dead. So I think that might be the right button. And it also had a very, very cool visual effect, which means that it was a powerful button to push.
See, this is already, I know, word for word what you would say. So we don't need to actually do it. You've now gotten the full flavor of it.
And then I'd be like, oh, is that that little guy from Arcane? Oh, it's a little guy from Arcane.
Hey, it's a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Vi and Jinx, and to a lesser degree, Jace, are all really good in the meta right now in the spring split that they're doing.
And not the little guy?
No, Heimerdinger was big during Worlds. He got played a lot, but he's kind of out right now. But Vi's back,
okay,
and that's great. So, hooray.
How's that, Ben?